This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, the Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/stringchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/stringchicks. masterclass.com/stringchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself. Welcome back to Shrink Chicks. We are so excited.
So excited.
To introduce our guest today, Amber Benzinger. And her bio on her website literally says she curses too much. So automatically, completely love her.
We think there's no such thing as cursing.
I've never believed in too much cursing, especially for clinicians, man. Because there is that whole study that came out about people that curse and were trustworthy. But along with her amazing cursing credentials, she's a licensed psychotherapist, a mental health advocate, speaker in Southern New Jersey. We fucking love Jersey. Burnout prevention, trauma therapy. And she's also the creator of the amazing Anxiety Lab. It's a one-of-a-kind membership service to help women manage and cope with anxiety through education, compassion, and community. So you guessed it, we're talking about anxiety today. Welcome, Amber.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here, and I'm so excited that I'm allowed to curse, because I was nervous that I wouldn't be and it would come out.
We would never do that to you, ever.
I wouldn't be allowed on my own show.
Right. Our show would be canceled already.
Yes. That's the beauty of podcasts, as opposed to like when you do speaking events, like especially like in professional communities, you like when you do a speaking event and you're like, I don't know what
to do. Do they bleep out shows anymore? Like, is that?
I bet cable. I don't have cable.
Do you? I think on some networks. Yeah, I don't have cable either. That's
no one has cable. No one knows.
I have cable. Right. I don't watch it though. I only watch it on Netflix, right?
They're cursing on Netflix.
Yeah, they're cursing on Netflix.
Yeah.
Because it's a private thing. Who knows? But Amber, welcome. How are you today?
I'm so good. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So I'm Amber Benzinger. I'm a licensed professional counselor. I have a private practice. It's just me in South Jersey, but it's currently virtual till God knows when because of COVID. So here we are with that. I also created the Anxiety Lab, which is a membership service, like you said. I created that during the pandemic because I was sitting in my feelings after I realized that my husband was right. This wasn't going to last 2 weeks. And I became really anxious, and my coping skills weren't available because nothing was available. So it was like, okay, where can I turn? And I got the idea to create that. So I'm really excited about it.
It's amazing.
And this is, I mean, like such an important topic. I want to say it's such an important topic right now. It's such an important topic always.
But it's a hot topic right now. Everyone's talking about anxiety. So let's sort of break it down, because not everything's anxiety, right? Some things are just worry. Some things are stress. So how are we defining anxiety here? Like, what do you think?
I think anxiety is like when it's the excessive worry, when it's lasting for long periods of time, when it's not just like, oh, you know, is this person going to be mad at me? It's like where I have this overwhelming ruminating thought that I can't get rid of, that's like eating away at you, and it's lasting for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good distinction to make, because there's parts of anxiety too that are helpful for you, right? Like there's reasons why we have anxiety. You know, our anxiety gets us to do certain things, you know.
Gets that adrenaline going. You can run faster. You can.
Right.
I always think about, you know, that when the moms can like literally lift a car to get their baby out.
Right.
I think that's anxiety and then like adrenaline. Yeah, I don't know what's happening there.
Absolutely. No, it's like, yeah, because anxiety is like a natural response. Everybody has it. It keeps us safe. But it's when we perceive a threat and the threat's not real and we kind of give into that perception that like this is a problem, then that's where it's like, okay, let's take a step back and challenge that and really look into it. Like, is this an issue or have I kind of created it? And that's my anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So one of the things I feel like we hear a lot is, where does anxiety come from?
So, I mean, it can come from a lot of places. You know, it can come inherently, like, are you an anxious person? It can come from things that have happened in your past and like your core beliefs. So we all have these systems. I always talk about that Disney movie, like Inside Out, you know, where they're like, oh, those core memories. Like, we all have those core beliefs. And it kind of creates who we are and these messages that we have about ourselves. And sometimes we'll have a message like, you know, I'm not enough or I'm not good enough. And then we get in these situations and that kind of creates this anxiety because we go back into that core belief. Where like normal situations that maybe other people who don't have anxiety wouldn't think were so stressful, just be like, oh, okay, my friend's mad at me, like whatever. But if you have someone with anxiety and you already have that belief of like, well, people don't like me, people don't think I'm good enough, then it becomes overwhelming and anxious.
You were saying that during COVID, you could feel that your anxiety was really high and that your coping mechanism, like they just weren't present. The things that you would use to cope, what would you say this is one of our listener questions. What would you say your favorite coping mechanism is for anxiety?
Definitely music. Like I have a playlist, like when I'm anxious, like when I have to go to the grocery store, especially during like the pandemic, I'm like, get away from me, people. So I have like my earbuds in and like my anxiety playlist. And it like keeps me grounded in the mood. It's something that I like and kind of brings me down. So definitely music. And then like a change of scenery. When I'm anxious and I'm sitting in my office or whatever, like get outside, move my body, do something that I'm, you know, outside of what I'm doing now to kind of change it up for myself.
I like that. What do you think your favorite coping mechanism is?
My favorite coping is being outside.
Yeah.
I would say like for me, like being in nature is a really big thing. Like if I'm having a hard time, I need to walk physically outside, especially if it's cold out, and take big breaths. And I think like for me, it's like sensory, you know, I don't know if it's part of my ADHD, but I really need something in my hands. I have a lot of energy coming out. And so if it's a shock, if it's cold air, if it's a cold shower, if it's something hot, that seems to really help me grounding wise. Do you have one?
Mine is disconnecting from technology. I think just disconnecting in general from like being very present with myself. And I think that technology so often takes me away from that. So I think that disconnecting from technology is really important. And I think that changing the scenery up to getting outside is something that can be really, really helpful with that. Because I think that's important. I think people, you know, really struggle to find coping mechanisms for themselves.
Is that part of Anxiety Lab?
Yes.
If someone was to join Anxiety Lab, would they maybe get some ideas for coping mechanisms?
Absolutely. So every month there's a different topic under the umbrella of anxiety, and I have a workbook that goes with it. So there's always coping skills to go with whatever we're talking about. This month we're talking about panic attacks. So coping skills and grounding techniques that go with that. Because I think what we also don't realize is like one coping skill isn't going to fit everybody. Like we just named three different ones for the three of us. So it's like what works for me and also what situation goes with what skill. So that's definitely something we talk about in the Anxiety Lab.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so now everyone has to go join the Anxiety Lab that's listening. There you
immediately.
Go. We're going to put all the information up on that in our social media as well. So another question somebody had asked him, which I thought was fabulous for the answer, is somebody had asked, what are some of the less common physical manifestations that might not be widely recognized as anxiety symptoms?
Yeah, I was just talking about this on Instagram the other day. So I think we all think of like, you know, sweating and chills and like headaches are common, but we don't think of like GI issues. Memory loss is a really big one. People don't realize that when they're anxious, they're holding their breath. They might not even know why they're doing it. Brain fog and kind of like stepping outside of yourself, like depersonalization, derealization, those are common ones that I feel like aren't talked about enough. Mm-hmm.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high-quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready-to-eat meals, kids' snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
No, I mean, I think it's true. I think you're right. Like sweating, I feel like sweating and tight chestedness is like what everyone talks about.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which was not ideal when they're also COVID symptoms.
Right. Further triggering the anxiety.
That was made it really rough for that whole shared symptom thing.
But I think it's important because everyone experiences anxiety differently, right? So one person's symptoms might look different than another person's. You know, there's a lot of talk now about like high functioning anxiety.
Yes.
And how that manifests itself, because, you know, it seems like it's harder to spot in someone because it's something that helps you to function.
We had a listener question just about high functioning anxiety now.
It says high functioning anxiety is praised, which made me unaware that I even had anxiety. What are the signs to look for with high functioning anxiety, would you say?
That's such a good question, because we live in this like hustle and grind world where it's like, oh, you didn't take a vacation because you were going to work. Like, that's amazing. Like, no, like we're on like a fast track to burnout, but like that perfectionism and that, like going above and beyond and saying yes when you want to say no. So really checking in with yourself about like, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because I want to? Do I feel good after it? Do I feel good doing it? And really creating that self-care routine for yourself before you get burnout, because it should really be preventative, right? So like self-care shouldn't be like afterwards, like, oh, I'll just take a long weekend after I burnt myself out for a month and then jump right back into that same schedule. So what can I do to kind of create that for myself? What do I need? And like really finding like your why. Why am I doing these things? Am I doing these things because I feel like my worth is built on my productivity, because I really care about what this person is saying, or because like I really give a damn about this and I want to do it?
I think it is easy to miss if you have high functioning anxiety because it serves you in certain ways, right? Like, and I think too, it would be hard, you know, I think people feel like, okay, if I work on this, then that means I have to completely give it up, right? Like if I work on my high functioning anxiety or if I do something to work on my anxiety in general, it means I'm not going to be productive or I'm not going to get things done or I'm not going to be able to do my job in the same way. But I think that finding a balance, right? Like when does your anxiety serve you? And then when is it not serving you? And so I think people are going to probably have these like moments in listening to this of like, oh wait, maybe I do have high functioning anxiety.
Right. I have high functioning anxiety. Same. Like I'm such a perfectionist and I'm like, whoa, dude, what are you doing? Like, right. Why are you doing this? Are you doing this because like, especially like during the pandemic, I was like, I need to create something. I need to do all these things. I need to be perfect. I need to make these weird Pinterest meals for my family and my children. Like, no, girl, take a time out. Like, what are you doing? It was like in overdrive because I needed to feel like I had all this control and it was like good enough and I was making good use of this time. Like, no.
I think really checking myself. Yeah, that was really common. That happened for us too. We went into like overdrive, like the amount of things we just reflected the other day on the amount of things that we did during 2020. And
well, we were also like, especially like as a small practice owner, you're like, is everything I've worked for going to fall apart?
Right? So
like,
scary.
We were all so scared because we're like,
we had anxiety.
Is anyone going to have money for therapy? Is therapy going to go out the window because people think it's excessive? Like, you know, the reality was.
Turns out people really need therapy.
It went the other way. But when it first started, it was so much unknown. It felt like the only thing we could do to control was to say yes to everything.
Absolutely. I felt the same way. Like I remember sending out the email to my practice, like I'm going to move everything online and like crossing my fingers, like everybody's going to be like, screw you. Like, I'm not coming. Like, fuck you, bitch. No. And I was like, please, like, I don't know what's going to happen. So yeah, I totally relate.
Right. And some people, I mean, some people said like, oh, I'll wait till you're back in person.
Oh,
I was like, all right. I was like, all right, cool. Like, I'll see you in 2 weeks. That's funny.
Right.
And then, yeah, then like 2 months later, you're like, so you're going to come back? Because like, I'm not coming back in person.
Anymore. Right.
So, but, and I think that that's also like, you know, you talk to yourself about like being a mom. That really, for me, it like can come out in motherhood of like highly functioning, right? So like, I always think about like, my anxiety is helpful in motherhood because I'm always watching my daughter. She's not going to get hit by a car when she's riding her bike.
Right.
But it's not helpful when I'm like helicopter, right? So like, sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's not so good.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have to watch that too. Like making sure that I'm not projecting my anxious nature onto them so that they're not like, wait, is there a danger? Like trying to play it super chill and cool. Like, this is fine. Even though I'm like, oh my God, do not climb on that. Like you have to let them
like,
do it.
So cool, it's like, this,
right. It's like this crazy balance.
Like, and I'm like, fine.
I'm like, I'm exhausted, but yeah, it's great.
I'm totally fine. Everything's okay. Because true. I mean, I had a mom who was very anxious. Have a mom who's still very anxious. Right. And the way in which it manifests itself is that when you have someone who is like very anxious and projecting the anxiety onto you, you internalize that. You end up being an anxious person. Mm-hmm. And here I am today.
Right.
Anxious today.
I say that about my son. I call him like Mr. Safety because he's always like saying to my daughter, like, Talia, do you think you should be doing that? Is that safe? And I'm like, oh no, is that me? Like, oh.
You're like, where'd that come from?
Right.
but I think it touches a little bit on, because I think that anxiety, a lot of people, what comes out is like this fear of the unknown, right? Which is something that we've all had to deal with. Mm-hmm. And it was especially prevalent in this last year. Can you speak a little bit to that? Like why that piece of it is so strong, that fear of the unknown?
I think we all hate uncertainty because we want this sense of control. We want to feel like we know what's going to happen. We're prepared for it. And I think for myself, I always have to remind myself, like, girl, were you ever really in control of that? Like, no, like, and think about like, what do I actually have control over? Okay. I have control over like how I'm feeling in this moment, how I react, and be really present in what's going on now. Like bring myself back. Like, why am I going to worry about something that either didn't happen yet or is the future, to bring myself back to the present by grounding myself and focusing on like what I do have control over, even if it's something as simple as like, okay, let's just focus on what's for dinner tonight and not focus on what, you know, is going to happen in December for planning for the holidays. Like, calm it down. So really like questioning myself. I always say like my biggest thing to help my anxiety is to be curious. Like, why am I feeling this way? What's going on? What can I control now? And like really checking in with me.
That, and I think that that in itself is like such a skill to develop, mm-hmm. to be able, because when, you know, when you're in the thick of the anxiety, mm-hmm. it's hard to even realize you're in it because you're so in your head. And so to go from being in the thick of it to taking yourself back to being like, okay, wait, where is this coming from for me? I'm recognizing that something's coming up for me. And I think a piece of it, and I know we always love to talk about this too, is how anxiety manifests itself physically. That sometimes we notice it more in our bodies before we can notice it in our minds. Can you speak to some of the physical manifestations of anxiety?
Yeah. So we talked about this a little bit, right? Like, yeah. Okay. So I think a lot of times too, that we don't realize that we're like holding the stress and stuff in our bodies. So maybe we're like, oh, we have this under control, but like, why am I not sleeping? Why am I up all night? Why am I getting chronic headaches? Why am I feeling sick and lethargic all the time? Am I running myself down? So really like checking in and listening to your body, and kind of like, okay, wait a second, what's causing this? Cause like, I'm not really sick. You know what I mean? So is it me putting too much stress, saying yes when I want to say no, going above and beyond and doing the things that I really don't need and don't really serve me?
Well, it's wild how many people, and I would imagine you've totally had this experience too as a clinician. It is wild to me how many clients that have come in that was like, well, I went to the ER because I thought I was having a heart attack and it was a panic attack. And they're like, no, 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 you're just stressed and anxious. Like, right. You need to go to therapy, you don't come into the hospital. And it is so wild that people, yeah, like they can be so in tune with their physical thing and go to the hospital, which in my opinion is even scarier than going to therapy, but I understand. Right. Like, I don't go to the fucking hospital.
Right.
But like, we're more willing to get help for a physical symptom than a mental symptom, right? Yeah. Like that one we seem as like, we're allowed to take time off of work for that, or we're allowed to go to the doctor, we're allowed to do this, but going to therapy and talking about it is like frivolous or something.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. There's so many people that call me or come into my office, like my doctor's telling me that I need to go to therapy because that's why I'm not sleeping. I don't know why they just won't give me medication. And it's like, well, like, are you stressed out about something? Are you anxious about something? Like, where are your thoughts? I think people don't even realize like, oh, wait, this isn't normal because they're so used to living with it. I think we create it as our norm. Like, no, I'm just supposed to be like super hyper vigilant and super stressed out all the time and super worried. But like, no, you don't have to live like that.
Yeah.
So it's like really your body's like, okay, well, if you're not going to listen, like I'm going to make you stop and listen.
Yeah.
And I think the stigma around focusing on like the mental health part of it is so different than focusing on the physical health, on your physical health, right?
Because if you're having tight chests, of course go to the hospital, right? Like everyone's like, call, even your boss would be like, oh my gosh, take the day, go to the hospital, go to urgent care. But, I'm having a heart. Well, are you getting enough rest? Well, are you getting self-care?
Right. And I feel like those things have become like such like buzzwords, like self-care, where like I feel like I spend a lot of time like explaining to my clients, like, I mean, if you want to go to the spa and you want to do a sheet mask, do you, girl?
Yeah.
But like that's not all it is, you know what I mean? So I think like people don't take that seriously because you see it kind of used everywhere, so loosely.
Everywhere.
And I think like the piece of self-care too, of like really recognizing, you know, like where your thoughts are going and being able to ask yourself those questions, just as you said, to say like, where is this coming from for me? Like having that internal dialogue is like a part of self-care too, to be able to like nurture yourself through it in a different way.
Yeah. And allow yourself to like really feel it instead of push it away. Like I think distraction works sometimes, especially when we're in those situations where it's like, we're in a crowd. We can't be like, hold on, let me like do this butterfly hug technique or some weird grounding. You're like, it looks strange. So like, I get it. Like, let me just distract myself really quick. But like, if we keep doing that, it just keeps coming back in different forms. And then that's how we get those like physical forms. You get those panic attacks.
Anyone
else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blueland. Blueland is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blueland products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blueland proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blueland is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packed. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, a lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon, or you can choose fragrance-free. Blueland has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
Okay, so I have a question for you, because I would imagine this has just grown so much over this past year. Is let's talk about death and dying and sickness anxiety, because I think health anxiety has skyrocketed, fear of death has skyrocketed, and also for a lot of us, I think especially as millennials get older, there's a big thing about our parents getting older and passing. So I was hoping you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so I feel like that's a tough one, because a lot of times it's like, okay, question this. Is this real? Could this happen? Like, eventually, yes, we know this is going to happen. So it's like, how do I not worry about it? It's that thing about, okay, can we ground ourselves and can we stay present? But then also like facing that, like, can we be more prepared? I know it's difficult to have those conversations, but especially in like things like exposure therapy, where it's like we kind of expose ourselves to that happening. What will that be like? What do I have in place? What support systems do I have? You know, talking to your parents, what does that look like? To kind of have yourself more prepared and feeling those feelings. I mean, it's going to be sad. It's going to like accepting that, but kind of knowing that like, okay, I have some sense of like, I know what's going on, some sense of preparedness.
Right. Right. Like, cause I think we try to say like, okay, that's not going to happen. They're fine. They're healthy. You know, that's a piece of almost like avoiding the anxiety or pushing it down in some way. And that it obviously is going to keep coming back where, you know, and I, of course it's going to be really hard when that happens. Right. And so that it sounds like it goes hand in hand with being able to accept, recognize the anxiety as opposed to pushing it away, to be able to say like, okay, I'm feeling this right now. And I know that this is something that's going to happen. And so how is that going to feel for me? How will I take care of myself through that?
Okay. So then I have a question. So then we're at this other time, right? So, which is like now the world's kind of starting to open up as more people get vaccinated and people stop caring, apparently. It's a whole other thing about COVID, you know, where people just doing whatever the fuck they want, apparently. But
right.
I think there's now an increased health anxiety.
Uh-huh.
Like for a lot of us, I'm wondering if you're starting to see that more in your practice.
I have as of late, especially as I feel like the world opened up. I thought it would be more of like, at the beginning, like, oh my gosh, do I have COVID? But I didn't really see that as much as like, when the hell is this gonna end? Like, what's going on? What is happening? It was more of that. Now it's like, wait, do I have COVID? What are the long-term effects? Is this person not being safe? Are things opening up too fast? Like, am I sick? So I feel like, again, really grounding yourself, like, okay, am I doing everything that I can to be cautious? Am I doing everything that I can to, you know, be okay? Do I know what this looks like? And then having somebody you can trust, like especially in the medical field, like do you trust your doctor? Can you talk to them? I'm a therapist, you're a therapist. So like, I think therapy is always great because like, okay, let's talk that through. Say you do get sick, say you get COVID, what happens? What does that look like? What's going to happen? Because I feel like we become so anxious in the uncertainty of it all. So like, let's talk it through instead of let's just like sit and ruminate in it.
Right.
Well, I love what you just said about like who's your team that you trust, right? And I think a lot of us, now we won't even get into how many people don't simply have insurance in this country, but for a lot of us, even that do have insurance, I can't tell you how many people I talk to that don't have a GP or don't have a PCP because they don't feel comfortable, or they aged out of their pediatrician and never found someone. So they just go to urgent care anytime, which isn't a problem for some people, but it could be potentially a problem if you're someone who has anxiety or specifically has health anxiety, because then you're seeing a new person every time of whoever happens to be at the urgent care. And it's true, as opposed to now, if you look specifically in our area, right, at Jefferson or Mainland Health, any of these things, you can just write in a message and they get back to you. But it's true, so many people do not feel comfortable and don't feel like they really have a team they can go to and trust.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think, well, yes, we could talk about healthcare forever, but I feel like it's having that support system. Yeah, having that support system and having those people in place, whether that's medical, family, like people that you can trust and that get you and then aren't going to be like, you're overreacting and be dismissive. You know what I mean? You want someone that can listen to you and take the time and be attentive.
Which actually brings up another question, because someone wrote, how do I explain to someone my anxiety who's never felt it before, which I think is a huge one.
Especially for couples, I would imagine, if one partner has, one partner doesn't.
Yes, I am that person. I'm the anxious person where my husband's like, everything is fine. And I'm like, the house is on fire. So I think it's really explaining to that person, because that person cares about you and they love you and they want to understand. So really explaining how it affects you personally, because it, again, anxiety is like one of those buzzwords. Everybody's like, I'm anxious. So like, what does that mean? So really honing in what it means to you, like giving examples, like I feel like I want to be able to go out to dinner, but I can't because my chest tightens up. Like I can't leave the house. I'm feeling so overwhelmed, or I'm up all night. So really explaining it about how it affects you and how it affects like you and that person, you know, I haven't called you back because of this or something like that. So they can really understand like, oh, wow, that's what you're going through. And then just, I feel like being vulnerable and honest with that person, allowing them to ask questions and then giving them ways that they can support you, because that's really going to be helpful. They're kind of like, okay, what's going on? What does this look like? If you're saying like, hey, just listen to me. Hey, just give me some space, so that they can really understand like what it is that you need, and maybe explaining a couple of your triggers so they can be aware. Like if you're in social settings and you start to like shake or something like that, they can be like, hey, are you okay? Do you need to step away? Just so they know how to support you. And then you're also getting the support that you need, so you don't feel like alone.
I love that part about letting them know what you need in those moments. And to be able to say, you know, when you're not feeling the anxiety, to be able to say, when I do feel anxious, this is what it looks like. And this is what I might need in those moments, or this is how you can support me in those moments. Because usually like our friends, our partners, they have no idea.
None.
Yeah, no.
We gotta educate them.
I mean, and if you've never experienced it, right?
Then like, it's hard to know. And everyone's anxiety is different. People need different things in those moments. Like some people might need to be left alone. Some people might need to be hugged, right? Like there's so many different things that we might need in those moments. And so to be able to first figure out what that is for you, right? Like what would be helpful in those moments? And then to be able to express that at a time in which you're not feeling anxious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and definitely just being honest, because I think sometimes I tried, like, especially early on in my relationship, I tried to be like, okay, I can handle this, but I couldn't. And then I would like lash out in other ways. Like, I feel like people don't realize that like anger and irritability is a really big symptom of anxiety. So like,
postpartum rage, not anxiety. Right. That was my big thing. Postpartum rage.
And I feel like people don't realize that, like, yes, I'm super anxious. I'm going to be like, get the hell away from me, because I'm so in my thoughts and my body is just so in like this super hyperactive mode. I can't handle whatever it is, even if it's a little thing like, hey, what do you want for dinner? Like, get the hell away from me.
Wait, is that you, Amber?
That is me.
I think we're kindred spirits. That's me. I go like, really, like I can remember being pregnant and I was like, everyone's like, oh, postpartum anxiety, postpartum depression. No. I remember throwing a glass at the wall one time. I was so angry. I just had like severe postpartum rage.
Oof. Yeah.
And no, depression, but that's how it came out.
Yeah, no, I am, if I'm super anxious, I mean, now I've learned to control it a lot better, but it would be like, especially like 22-year-old Amber. Oh yeah, that girl was nuts. You know, I feel like people don't realize it. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And I was like, wait a minute, this is happening like when I'm anxious. So it's like, mm-hmm. okay, how do I control that so I can express, because I couldn't express what I needed. I couldn't express how I was feeling. So it was really like being able to communicate that. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm having this like crazy, like I can say to my husband, like I'm having this like crazy ruminating thought of like something ridiculous, like your dad hates me right now. Like, and that's not even true. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it often, so often too, comes out as anger in men because men are socialized to believe that anger is like a stronger emotion, right? Mm-hmm. And so that like the feeling, the physical feeling of anger and anxiety like are very similar, right? Like there's such a tightness internally. But I think for men, sometimes it's coming out as anger when underneath it could be anxiety or could be a whole host of other emotions.
No, absolutely. And I think it's just really getting in touch with like, where is this coming from? Again, like you said, having that ability to do that. And it's not always easy. It's definitely a process and work. But when you are able to do that, it makes so much more sense to yourself. You're able to come back quicker. I think that's what people don't understand about anxiety. It's like the bane of my existence when I see people like, I can eliminate your anxiety in these 4 steps. Like,
oh my gosh.
There is no elimination, but you learn how to manage it better. And it becomes like a quicker thing. Like, okay, I realize this is my anxiety. I can label it as such and like move on with my life. It's not eliminated, but you know, you manage
and
it.
Right. And it never will be.
Yeah.
And I think that the acceptance of it is a way in which it helps you to nurture yourself through it in a different way, as opposed to when you're trying to push it down, right? The more you try to push it down, the more it's going to come up, the more you're going to be panicking about the fact that you're panicking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I just think that 22-year-old Amber and 22-year-old Emily would have really had a good time together and then had a lot of issues together. I think we're on the same wavelength. But I also think there's a part where like, that's also then like where shame can start to grow. Right. Mm-hmm. If you look back and feel like embarrassed of that part of yourself, even if you're like, that was about anxiety, that was about like not having the ability to verbalize needs and emotional wellness, but it feels very shameful. And I think there's a lot of people, especially women, who can end up feeling that way. But someone, we had quite a few people that wanted to know the difference of stuff, right? So a few people wanted to know about the difference. This is a very interesting one. I am excited to see
what you
say.
We've got this question a lot.
We have gotten this multiple times. I feel like we've answered multiple times, but no one ever likes it. So people really want to know the difference between anxiety and intuition.
Man, I hope this is a lot of pressure.
I know. Sorry.
That's okay. It's like, I actually get this question a lot, and it's surprising. But to me, anxiety is rooted in fear. So like, if you're coming from this like place of like fear and worry and stress, that's anxiety. I feel like intuition is like this place that's like grounded in an observation and in like, there's some sense of clarity. Like even if you don't like the answer, you still feel like, okay, that's it. Like you feel good about it. Like this like moment of like, okay, eureka type of thing, where anxiety is just like, oh my goodness, what is happening? Like, I can't control it. So I feel like it feels different. Like there's more like physical symptoms of like stress and worry. Whereas that intuition is like, oh, okay, that's it.
Even if it sucks.
Yes.
I like that answer.
That's a very good answer. That might be the winning answer.
I think it is.
We're gonna type it up.
We'll see. If people keep asking it.
Yeah, we're gonna type that one up. Okay, anxiety attack versus panic attack.
Okay, so panic attack is like physical in nature. It's like when you're in the ER and you're like, I'm dying. What is this? Like you can't breathe. Your whole body is like, feels like it's like shutting down. You're like in overdrive, you're hyperventilating. Where anxiety attack is more like, yes, it can be a physical where it's like, okay, heaviness in your chest, but it's more like these ruminating thoughts. It's just like, you can't stop. It's like the feeling of extreme overwhelm. Or panic attack is like completely physical. It also goes away in like 30-ish minutes with like that heightened at the 10 minutes. Whereas an anxiety attack, it's usually like based on something. So like if, you know, I'm fighting with a partner or whatever and we make up, then my anxiety is gone. Whereas a panic attack can just like come out of nowhere. It doesn't really even need to have some type of specific instance to occur.
All right.
I love it.
That is, okay. Now, last, this is your final difference. Final difference.
I feel like this is a test.
Like sweating over there.
Anxiety versus worry versus stress.
Okay. So I feel like
are you Wikipedia? Like, people just really want you to be Wikipedia.
Yes. Hold on, let me get out Google. So I feel like stress and worry can create anxiety. So everybody has like stress and worry. Those are normal. Everybody has anxiety, but I feel like it's when the stress and worry become like overwhelming and all consuming. So like, yeah, I can be stressed out about like, what am I going to make for dinner tonight? But if it becomes like, what am I going to make? I don't know what I'm going to do. And like, I'm just like sitting in it. That's when it becomes anxiety. So there's like a normal amount of stress and worry. You know, if you're a parent, you're going to worry about your kids. If you're a kid, you're going to worry about your parent. You know, I mean, those are normal. But when it becomes like all consuming, that's anxiety.
Do you feel like you're back in grad school with these definitions?
Yeah. This is like, I'm like, okay, good job. You got this.
This is actually how the board relicenses you now. You have to do a random podcast. This is your relicensure.
This is actually a surprise. We are part of the board.
You've passed so far.
No way. You have too much personality for that.
Yeah. So true.
Wow. Great fucking response.
Really great.
Man, I'm trying to hang out with Amber. All right.
We're going to travel to Jersey.
We're having a post-COVID date, man. I'm trying to chill.
Please do.
All right. Here's a really great one, which I think is really easy, is people are sort of asking about how does anxiety present differently in people with depression versus people not with depression?
I think for anxiety and depression coupled, it can become like this cycle where like you have these moments where you're feeling really anxious, and then after they end, or they kind of lead into the depression of like, okay, like now I feel really low, that like I was super anxious about that. So it can kind of be like this like secular thing. So I feel like that's the difference. They just kind of like feed off of each other and into each other.
I love it.
But I don't think it's like, if you have anxiety with depression, your anxiety looks different, because everybody's anxiety looks different. So it's kind of hard to say like, if you have depression, your anxiety will look like this. Like, I don't think that that's the case. I just think that when you have both, it becomes like this secular thing that really plays off of each other. And that can just be really like overwhelming and kind of like disheartening. So again, plug for therapy. I think therapy would be a really great way to kind of help you break out of that cycle.
So I want to know, so who would be candidates for the anxiety lab?
If you are a woman that is struggling with anxiety, if you feel overwhelmed, if you feel like I've lost all control and I don't know what to do, come to the anxiety lab. If you are feeling panic and overwhelmed and you're like, what's next? I don't know what coping skills to use. Come to the anxiety lab. If you are a woman that is anxious, we are here for you. So,
I feel like you're going to get so much business just from that. Everyone. I know, me too.
Yeah, right. We're signing up. We're going to the anxiety lab. What do you think? What is your number one piece of advice? What's the takeaway for people with anxiety? What do you want them to know?
I think my biggest takeaway is to be so gentle with yourself and just have self-compassion. I think we are so hard on ourselves, especially women. We are hard on ourselves. We think that we need to be perfect. We need to be on, we need to do all the things, and no one can do all the things. So take it one thing at a time, be nice to yourself. Think about the way that you're talking to yourself and the way that you're showing up for yourself, and get curious. When you're anxious, like, think about like, what's going on? What is this telling me? What's happening? And really kind of sit with yourself. I know that's like one of those annoying ass things that therapists say, like, same with yourself, but really, like, instead of running from it, really try to acknowledge that you're having anxiety, label it as such, and really feel it, and really ask yourself, like, where is this coming from?
That's awesome. That's great. It's true, you got to sit with yourself.
Yeah. Amber, where can people find you?
So they can find me on Instagram. My handle is amber_verse_anxiety. You can find me at theanxietylab.com, or you can find me at vitalitybehavioral.com. That's my private practice.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You've helped so many people, I'm sure, just with them listening to this. Then check out the Anxiety Lab.
Check out Dating Xylit. If this episode related to you or you think someone might benefit from it, feel free to pass it along. You can always rate, review, and subscribe and listen anywhere that you listen to your podcast. We love you and we'll talk to you all soon.